Welcome to the Six Again podcast, your new destination for all things NRL. Here to bring you everything from team news to best bets are your hosts Adam Hoy and Jared Mutton. Let's kick off.
Hello and welcome into the Six Again podcast, our second episode, the 2022 season. Jared and Adam here with you. How you going, buddy?
Yeah, good. It's been all sorts of fun the last couple of weeks. How are you going?
Really tired, but for good reasons. Shot down to Brizzy yesterday, see Benny Taylor for his birthday, and went out to a bar, complete COVID safe, and had about 10 or 12 sour beers, and I didn't have any taste buds this morning, which is brilliant. And Australia won the Ashes 4-0. After England absolutely collapsed on the third day, which was hilarious.
It was, but like, I think Stuart Broad said it best. I'm pretty sure it's between the fourth and the fifth game, or the third and the fourth game. He came in and said, you know, the best bowling attack in the world, but if you get bowled out for less than 200, you're not going to win any games.
Yeah.
It was really strange because in the last couple games, there was changes in the batting lineup for England. But for the majority of the series, they chopped and changed the bowling attack like six or seven times. It was ridiculous how many changes they made for it. But my point is there was less changes in the batting lineup than there was the bowling lineup when the bowling lineup was doing a half-decent job. Like, Australia got bowled out for pretty shitty totals a few times for the series, but then the batting team just, like, fucking horrendous. Like, and poor old Stuart Broad and James Anderson, like, as an Australian, you don't like those. But you don't like those two for
many reasons.
They're the premier fast bowlers for England for the last, 20 years or whatever it is. And the fact one's 39 and one's, 36 and they're still doing what they're doing, I had a bit of respect for them for that. And they were running in all series, just getting pounded all around the thing, but still making it hard for the Australians. And then they go into the sheds and go, oh, I've got Australia for 10. How am I going to have a day off now? 4 hours later, they're fucked.
Straight back out there.
They're bowling the poor bastards.
And like, if I was an England fan, or if I'm on the England board or whatever, I'm going, we just got beaten 4-0. And
luckily 4-0, because the fourth game Australia should have won if it didn't rain.
So it was like, neither Smith nor Warner got centuries. And we hit five for the series, two from Head, two from Khawaja, and one from Labuschagne. Yeah. And Khawaja wasn't even in at the start. You look at going, wow, we just got our butt kicked. And Australia's best two batters of the recent memory didn't even get centuries. So, and then I looked at the end, I always like doing, I think Fox Sports did as well, putting together my best 11 between the two teams. And it's funny you mentioned the England bowling attack. They were much better than their batting. And I couldn't get any England bowlers in anyway.
No, I couldn't either. Like that, but they troubled Australia enough. Like, if you're going to pick the best team, you could probably only have Milan and Root from the English squad. They're the only two you could probably think of.
I had more. Well, I didn't I didn't have Milan for one.
I rated him throughout the series higher than bloody. I worried about him more than Root throughout the series.
Yeah, but you look at the position where they bat. When you do series comparisons, basically, it's like a one-on-one sort of matchup.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. But I would have dropped Root lower down the order, at least.
But then you have to replace Head, and he was like Australia's best batsman. So I ended up having...
Rory Burns?
Oh, hell no. So the openers from both teams were just... Not one opener had a really, really good series. So,
Warner started all right. He got out for three times in the 90s. Like, he started all right. Two or three times, whatever. He started all right.
Yeah. He just... Broad was in his head again. But anyway, I ended up going with Harris and Crawley as the two openers.
Harris?
Yeah.
Marcus Harris over Warner.
For this series, yes.
The guy who averaged 20, as opposed to Warner, who would have added about 30 or 40, considering he did get those two 90s and a 60.
Yes. He also didn't get two ducks.
Oh, in the last game, that didn't matter. I'm pretty sure he would have got two ducks.
No, no, no.
Somewhere. Warner gets ahead of Harris. Bloody hell.
Warner was horrible. And Harris wasn't much better, but they were both really bad. Can't put Kawhi to there because he only played one game at opener and it was horrible as well, as was Rory Burns and so was Hamid. So it was pretty much any time the openers walked out, you're like, there's going to be a wicket within the first 10 overs, and there usually was. Labuschagne, Root, Head,
except
Green.
Except for England.
Yeah, so only had Crawley and Root in for England, and then from five down it was Australia.
Yeah, Root, I don't
Root was better than Smith.
Yeah, Root was better than Smith.
And then it'd be Head, Green, so, Terry, Cummins, Stark, Bowl and Lyon.
So in 2021, England only won one game. And every other time they come close to a game, Root scores a century. No one else's English team has scored a century. Like, it is...
It's like the fourth best year of a batsman in history or something like that.
Yeah. And see, the thing about it is they're all like, oh, we need a drop in this captain. Who else is there? You can't have Ben Stokes as their captain because the ball bastard has to do everything else for them. He has to bowl 140Ks. He's in within 15 overs of the game or the batting line. It has to, like, every time he comes in, you're like, oh, here we go. He's going to start swinging. But there's nothing the poor bastard can do. Like, you can't have Stokes as captain. You'll burn him out after, like, two series. I feel so bad for that man. Like, and Root's the only one they can consider as captain. And I don't think he deserves to lose his captaincy. There was nothing that boy could have done more in this series to... there's always things you can say, but he was the top run scorer. He didn't very rarely drop the
catch. Yeah, no, I get all that. It's just captaincy was pretty bad. Well, not bad, but it's just there was a fair few times where he could have done things ahead of time instead of reactionary. But anyway, we are a rugby league podcast, I promise. We'll get to it. And anyway, it's good to see the rear of England, and we'll beat them over there next time.
We'll say that Joe Root's going to score a century in Australia, and I'm stoked about that.
Oh, that's so
funny. Oh, and big other news, Virat Kohli has stepped down as English test captain. And the reason he's India's test captain. And the reason he stepped down was he was about to be fired.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Well, no one is under more pressure in cricket than the Indian captain, whoever it is. So it's affected him. So let's get on with it.
In the world, Indian cricket.
So, regular league wise this week, I got to have a really cool chat with Sean Buchanan on Friday night. He's one of our listeners, and he's on Twitter as well. At 5'8", what's up? I like that. And he posed a question to Gus Gould, and the reply is what triggered me to get in touch with him, so we'll cover that. We'll be going over our starting 17s for Manly, Newcastle and Canterbury coming into the 2022 season. There's a fair bit of signings news and a couple of... It's starting to pick back up.
There's signings and the news coming out of rugby league.
Thank you, Jared. And just some other stories with regards to COVID, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we will start with Justin Holbrook and his comments through the week saying bigger squads could be a COVID necessity. So basically traveling with a larger squad than you usually would. So if someone does test positive, instead of the entire game being postponed, if you've got a hockey used it last year, they called it a taxi squad. You can call someone straight in and that player drops out. In today's world, it makes sense. Obviously it's not something I want to see going forward, but while COVID's still around, it's a way to hopefully limit the amount of postponements that may happen.
Yeah, I was just curious about the logistics. Can you explain taxi squad? Do they train with the main squad, or they do like New South Wales Cup and they train separately? So then when someone does go down, they can just move someone from the taxi squad up? Like,
yeah, is it
my point is, do they stay together, all say the 10 extra players they bring in, or do they travel behind them like a following camp?
Yeah, I'd assume like it is a little bit different because in American sports, you've got your feeder club sometimes can be in a completely different city and its entire club by itself. And when players move up and down by the club, it can take days for the transaction to occur, depending on where you're at, all that sort of stuff. Whereas in the NRL, your top squad and your fringe squad still pretty much train together. They're the opposition or they're in a post session. So I would assume that what do they take, 20 generally? So you got your 17, your 18th man, and then your two. Three, so it's 21.
No, I was thinking that so the top 30 contracted players last 2 years that had to go on the bubble. Yeah. I'm thinking Justin Holbrook's wants another 10 on top of that 30. That's what I'm thinking because in case something does happen when they go on the bubble again, like last year, what was it? Warriors were only being able to name 18 players or something for that reason. Yeah. Because they couldn't get people to do the proper isolation protocols if someone did go down to come in time. I was more thinking that, it leans more towards the bubble and then they go from 30 to 40 because the whole 30-man squad would come into the bubble with, or is it?
Yeah, okay.
It might be 25.
It might be 35, so an extra 5 players you have on your 30-man. It wouldn't count, obviously, towards salary cap and stuff. It'd be players from your feeder club, but at least have them training with the main squad. They know the players and all that sort of stuff. And the second part of the story, which I found quite amusing, was he was talking about the BBL and teams having to call up club cricketers to fill gaps in the 2020 lineups for the state teams. And I thought that was funny because it's pretty much just a club cricketers
BBL is a
version of sport.
If you want to actually see something really fun, the videos all over the place on Sportsbet about who they should bring in. They bring in like John Howard and Paddy
Paul. Oh, yeah.
Best crew. It's so much fun.
Go in there, close your eyes, swing.
Yeah. See what happens.
Oh, I'm a firm believer of bringing in 11 batters and you'll win more often than not. But that's just my opinion on it. I wouldn't be surprised if this goes ahead, if it's something, like 35 that you take to each game when you're traveling, even if you travel within, say, two squads that travel. So if the
sun goes down, that's the part I was a bit curious about. So imagine if one player gets COVID for whatever reason, if they're in the bubble, that's probably unlikely, but if, the world is out there. COVID is also running amok in the world. If one player goes in, then he's symptomatic and takes it when he walks in training and he changes, interacts with everybody. And that's my question, if there's like a sort of followers camp who train separately so they can bring him into like a isolation camp, if you want to call that. I don't know what the protocol will be, but if one player goes down, if they knock out 5 players, but the followers all get COVID, it's still going to be the same issue. That's my point. Like, you got to have, I don't know. Like, it's a mess that no one can win.
We'd assume that the bubble's not going to come back, but everyone will be having to take and come back with positive tests before they're allowed to go on buses and planes and all that sort of stuff.
I would not be surprised. I don't think many players will handle it. Many people handle it justifiably so, but I don't think,
I think with this style, this strain of COVID, I don't think the bubble's going to work anyway, because if one person in there gets it, then everyone's guaranteed pretty much the way that this one travels. All right, moving on to the path well travelled. Willie Mason has locked in a new coaching role. So he was coaching with the Bulldogs last year, kind of here and there, but he's been locked in now as a permanent coach with the title Transition Pathways Officer, which kind of scares me a little bit. Let's just hope that he has learned for some of his own mistakes and his own path through the sport. Thoughts on that one, Jared?
I don't know. Wee Mason never really been in the public eye giving his opinions about the sport. Two ways I'm looking at this. One way is absolute goldmine, where he's just going to be able to do his job really, really well and no one really expected it to him other than the Bulldogs hierarchy. Or on the other hand, they're trying to bring back the history of the Bulldogs.
I think it's more along that line. And
yeah,
because it's talking about his role will work closely with players of all ages within the pathways role.
I get that.
Yeah.
But I like it as a consultant coming in every so often as like a up here to like get into it, but not a someone every day around, not like someone who has to, his job is transitioning the pathway, should be challenging these kids mentally with new ways of doing things consistently. And if he's just there to go, you know, back in 2004 when I won the Clive Churchill, we did it this way, and that's the same fucking thing he's parroting every single time, is that going to help your pathways or what? Like, if it's like that, that's my issue. But he could surprise me completely and be the best pathway officer in the NRL. I don't know.
That's very much a Gus Gould move, I think, getting the Bulldogs back to where they were. And one of the ways, and many clubs do it, is by bringing in players who are successful in that era. And Willie Mason was definitely one of those for the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
On to another, a recently successful club in the Melbourne Storm, recently and past. Looks as though the COVID saga is going to take another victim with regards to Nelson Asofa-Solomona. So the Melbourne Storm have reached out on a number of times to try and get a contract sorted with regards to his vaccination status. He's definitely a non-vaxxer. He's very clear about that. And it looks as though the decision is going to be taken out of Melbourne Storm's hands, with Asofa-Solomona very close to signing on for Japanese Rugby Union for the team that's Robbie Deans coaches. So
Panasonic Wild Knights.
Panasonic Wild Knights, that's the one. He has played rugby union, but not since a very young teenager, because Melbourne Storm picked him up at 15 years of old. It's understood Rugby Australia will be keeping a close eye on the situation as well.
Of course they will.
Yeah.
Rugby Australia. Oh, my God.
Yes, they will. I still don't see him cracking the Wallabies, because in their forwards are actually quite decent at the moment in the back row. And he's definitely not going to be cracking the All Blacks anytime. 100%
will crack the Wallabies. What?
He's not a back.
He'll crack the Wallabies. So much, so easy. You just get a contract so he can come over. That's the union MO.
Yeah, true.
They're kidding themselves.
But the vaccination stance, again, will stop them likely making an offer in the near future anyway. So,
talking about New Zealand, Japanese.
I just don't. I 100% just don't get this guy. I just, you've got a dream job. You're highly thought of in the league with regards to your position, and I don't know, if it's a religious thing or something like that, I guess there's more understanding with regards to the decision. But every time he's talked about trying to use stats and stuff about why frontline people aren't getting it. And you're like,
yeah, look,
I don't know where you're getting your information from, man.
I'm pro-vaxxed. I'm fully vaxxed. Dipping our toe into a bit of a fucking murky current social issue, right?
Yeah, I know. You've got a pro club doing everything they can. They've supported you for this long. And yeah, if you're against it for a certain reason, I'd want concrete evidence or something that's really having an impact on your lifestyle, whatever.
The thing about it is, and you touched it right there, the only thing he's got is the loyalty to the club. But the reality of it is that if this is a reason he can get out of the contract and earn billions and squillions more money in rugby union. So, and he has this belief against the vaccination. He has a chance to set his family up for life.
Yeah, I don't. That hasn't been anything to do with money yet, though.
Well, not publicly. And I'm not saying that's his motivation, but what I'm saying is that his career definitely has a shelf life. He can earn squillions doing less work overseas.
Mm.
And I don't know if that's just a general reason as to why he's not vaxxed. I can't tell you. He's got his own reasons. But the reality of it is that you say that he's got this dream job, but he's going to have his dream job getting paid more to do less back in another country.
Well, he's definitely going to get paid more. So he says in rugby league, he's not going to get paid anything. And there we go.
But he goes to the union, he's going to pay trillions and trillions of dollars. Over there, he's going to look like a mountain man.
All right. Last thing before we jump into that interview with Sean is getting you guys up to date with the Rouser signings that have occurred. And there's been a fair few. So Titans winger Phil Sammy has extended for another 2 seasons. So he'll be there through to the end of 2024. Bit of reward there for all the improvement and development he has shown. Panthers hooker Mitch Kenny has re-signed with the club on a 2-year extension as well. So that'll keep him through to the 2024 season. And that'll give him pretty much the starting dummy half role next year with Appy Korosau's departure to the West Tigers. Ash Taylor has been upgraded at the Warriors to a full-time NRL contract after signing a training trial deal with the Warriors. So that's really good news for Ash Taylor there. Interesting to see what a halves pairing with him and perhaps Sean Johnson could look like. We'll see. West Tigers have boosted their backline stocks with the sign of Stafford Toa from the Knights for the next 2 seasons. So Toa's grants are released by Newcastle for the final 2 years, and he's already been scooped up by the Tigers. And that kind of makes more sense when we look at the Newcastle team coming up. So there are a lot of outside backs fighting for, in my opinion, one position. So we'll see. Seagulls have secured 3 of their most exciting youngsters. KO Weeks, Tolu Koala, and Ben Trbojevic have all extended deals. All 3 of these guys will play NRL. One of them already has.
And just so you do know, the Trbojevic's father is the groundsman for Manly on $800,000 a year.
All 3 have come through recently successful Seagulls Pathways Academy and will be pushing for positions during certain times through the season, you'd assume. Well, definitely Koala.
Ben's not in the top 17, but he will be. He's very, very close. He played a few games last year, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah. And we talked about Tamari Martin last pod, pretty sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. All righty. So just to prep you guys, I said we had an episode a few weeks back called Crazy Concepts that Nick Wallace and I did together, and we put forward 3 ideas each that we thought would be really cool for the NRL to implement, obviously knowing they aren't ever going to do it. But that was a point, come up with a crazy concept. And I saw a tweet by Sean Buchanan that he went to Gus Gould saying, hey, what about an FA Cup style knockout rugby league tournament between NRL clubs, Q Cup, New South Wales Cup, and then qualifying teams below that, similar to what the A-League does with their FFA Cup. And what got me triggered on this was Gus Gould's reply saying, no, the score lot, there'd be too many blowouts in the scoreline. So I replied like the NRL last year and we got no reply after that. But it got me thinking. I reached out to Sean and said, hey, can you break down your idea for us? We did an interview and when we post this episode, I'm going to put up a couple of pictures of what the draw looks like as well and the last of his ideas that we didn't get to talk about. So I hope you enjoy this interview with Sean. So welcome into our interview. I've got Sean Buchanan here, a rugby league fan, and he's come up with a crazy concept, which for those who heard our crazy concepts episode 3 or 4 episodes ago, this would have fitted in with that perfectly. But we'll save the concept for a little bit. We're just going to get to know Sean. How are you, mate?
Not too bad. Thanks for having me. Oh, sorry. Excuse me. I just had my dinner myself. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's always like that on a pod. Mine's sitting upstairs, actually. I just finished it. Everyone else is eating. I've come down here to do this, so know exactly how you're feeling. Sean threw his idea up on Twitter and I saw it and reached out to him. He was kind enough to say, yeah, I'll jump on the show and talk about it. And again, before we get to it, what's your rugby league story? Who do you support? How'd you get into rugby league?
I was lucky enough to be born in Nepean Hospital. So I'm a Penrith supporter through and through.
James, I hate that already.
I'm old enough to have remembered my town being covered in brown and white for the 1990 grand final. Wow. And the joy of 1991. And then thankfully it wasn't as long as it could have been, as poor Parramatta fans have had to do. But on the year I turned 18 and graduated high school was also 2003. So that was lovely.
Oh, mate. Perfect.
And now I've got four boys, three of them that play football, and they all play for the Glenmore Park Brumbies here just across the road from me.
Well, there we go. That's a...
And I'm on the committee.
Oh, there we go. It's very similar to Jared's family and their association with their local rugby league. We're talking before the recording that you used to also host a rugby league show on YouTube.
Used to host Talking Footy a couple of years back now. We went for three seasons, but it became a bit more of a hassle when AFL decided to run their own show, Talking Footy, and I started getting bombarded with messages about full forwards, which I've got no idea about. So we ended up, instead of having an IP problem, we just cut our show.
Right, that's brilliant. As a Twitter user, have you ever seen the guy called Steve Smith on Twitter, and he just gets absolutely slammed because they think he's the Australian captain?
Yeah, poor guy. I've seen him before saying, I don't know anything about fine eggs. Don't ask me why I've got to put him there.
100%. And we haven't had it as bad, but we're called the Six Again podcast. And that was literally the next season where they brought in the Six Again rule. And that was just horrible, horrible timing. But at the same time, people are talking about it. So that can't be
that's too bad. Word of mouth from Phillip Street. Well, not Phillip Street anymore. It's from Hall Park.
It is. All righty. So what's this idea of yours that got my brain all jumping around? And regular listeners to my show, our show, know that I love the out there ideas and ways to always mix up the game, especially with regards to fan interaction. And this is similar in one ways and different in every other way to something that I've talked about in a previous episode. So why don't you talk us through what your and who you posed this question to and what their reply was?
Yeah, well, it all started with Gus's was asked, Gus Gould, the legend that he is. Just a side note, I also happen to have gone to the same high school as Gus Gould, which is just irrelevant on this one, but Gus actually was having an argument with somebody about if a New South Wales Cup or Queensland Cup team could beat the Bulldogs, who were not travelling too well the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me thinking about the Challenge Cup in the UK, how it's open to all grades. So I'd ask Gus, do you think it'd be an idea to be able to have a cup tournament knockout just like they have over there and include the New South Wales Cup, the Queensland Cup, the second division teams, which unfortunately he quickly shot down, but that's okay. And that's when you contacted me, thankfully.
Yeah, well, I saw the idea and it was partly your question, but it was partly Gus's reply as well, where his reasoning seemed to be along the lines of the score lines would just be absolute blowouts. And my reply to that was, well, wasn't that the NRL last year anyway? Like,
yeah. And that's one of the things too, like, it wasn't always that way. I mean, we've got a history in rugby league. We used to have the AMCO Cup, the Panasonic Cup, the Lotto Cup. It was normally like a more of a pre-season kind of one, but they also, it varied over the years. So knowing that Western Divisions actually beat Penrith in, I think it was 1978, I think it was. Don't quote me on that.
I'm not going to correct you. I'd have no idea.
It's definitely possible for a team that doesn't play in the top grade to compete. And we've seen that over time as well in the English game for not just rugby league and the Challenge Cup, but the FA Cup,
yes,
which is a massive deal. And we've also now got in the A-League, the FFA Cup. And we have seen teams that don't play in the top grade but have semi-professional players really pushing the other squads. Mm-hmm. A lot of those times in a lot of these games, you won't see the top teams play their top 17. This is normally a time when they find a way to rest players.
Yeah.
So that's when you do get the upsets. So if you were to just do it pre-season, I don't believe it'd work. I think it'd kind of just be a flash in the pan. You wouldn't get enough players. It'd need to be done properly. So as much as this is a pie in the sky idea, I've written down some details which aren't set in concrete, but I think could actually make this whole concept work.
All right. So before we get to the timeline of where you'd put it in, I just want to clarify a couple of things that I'm assuming without actually asking you beforehand. So the first thing I thought of was the FA Cup as well and how that's set up. One difference, a key difference to me though, I'm a big ice hockey fan, and ice hockey is the pro sport where luck counts for more than in any other sport, with the puck bouncing and the goal and all that sort of stuff. Soccer's very similar with regards to that. We're a minnow team, and I'm an Arsenal fan, and we just got knocked out of the FA Cup by a second div team. You need one goal, and then you just park everyone back in defense, and you can get away with it. And that wouldn't work so much in rugby league, because
that's true.
You can, there's that ebbs and flows. But my first thing I'm going to assume is, in something like this, similar to the FA Cup, the top teams usually get buys for, say, the first three rounds before they don't usually come into the comps till, say, the round of 32 or round of 16 or whatever. Is that, well, it can't be the round 16, it's not 16 in NRL clubs. But is that along the same thinking that you had?
Definitely. So I've got it down here, as I just grabbed my notes, that you would have, it'd be, now considering this is taking into account not just the Dolphins coming in, but also the 18th franchise that has to come in. Cool. It's going to happen. We know it's coming.
Yeah.
So that would determine that we'd change the NRL season to 18 rounds. We only play everyone once.
Ooh, okay.
However, we know that broadcasters wouldn't have
They'd say no. Yeah, 100%.
Unless we actually give them properly what's going on. So this, bear with me here.
Yeah. So
it'll be a 32-team knockout, complete knockout.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Challenge Cup over in the UK, they run a lot of qualifiers before they get to those levels, and they will run it through so that the bottom eight teams from the Super League will start come in before the top eight teams of the Super League. But by that stage, they've already gone through about four rounds of competition. This would eliminate a lot of that, be able to have all of them running concurrently with the NRL season.
Yeah.
There are three ways of determining that cup draw, which give up, they've all got their merits, and it depends on how they really want this to go. Number one would just to have the 14 lower teams face off against each other. Number two would be the NRL team start off straight away against the lower ranked teams, which would just be disaster. Cricket scores, no good. And the third one would be a random lottery like the FA Cup. The number two, you just want to cross out straight away.
You do not
want something like that. Because the way I've got it set up is you'd have the 18 clubs from the NRL in the cup.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'd have five clubs from the New South Wales Rugby League, five clubs from the Queensland Rugby League, a New Zealand residence club. So that'd be a representative team.
Yeah.
The Fiji Silk Tails have to be in there, as well as the PNG Hunters. have to be in there, because if we're going to do this and actually grow the game, and that's one of the reasons it's here, you can't just keep it centric.
Yeah, cool.
And the last team would be in would be a qualifier. You'd have to go through qualifying rounds, whether that be a representative team from Perth. It could be a team from the Ron Massey Cup, which is a level below the New South Wales Cup here in New South Wales. So if you were to have, say, Brisbane Broncos playing against East Brisbane Tigers in the first round, not a great idea.
Yeah.
It's, you know what's going to happen.
So can I just get clarification? So that gives us 18 NRL teams, 10 from New South Wales Cup, Queensland Cup. So that's 28. PNG, yep. 29. Warriors, New Zealand, 30. You said Fiji, 31. And then there'd be a qualifier to make it 32 teams.
That's yep. correct.
Would that yep. qualifier, do you think, could be, say you've got 5 from New South Wales Cup, 5 from Queensland Cup, could yes. there, say, the 6th team from both of them play off against each other? And that could be
that's
a wild card possible. Sort of wild card round sort of playing.
Oh, definitely. The only reason I've said that with the qualifier is because I'd want to keep the clubs that are playing in the cup not direct affiliates to the not the direct feeder team to the NRL. So I wouldn't want, say, the St. George Illawarra team, reserve grade, playing it. It'd be like when in cricket you'd have the tri-series with Australia and Australia A.
Yeah. So that was one of my big questions, in that if it was all New South Wales Cup and Q Cup teams, how would they substitute the players? Because Melbourne Storm have, say, 3 feeder clubs. If the Storm came up against one of them, or if the Storm had a tie on the same night as them but against 2 different opposition, how is something like that going to work?
Yeah, what you'd have to do is you'd have to find out which of the teams have direct feeder clubs. So with that, you'd have ones like Penrith, St. George Illawarra, West Tigers, and you couldn't have their direct teams that play in the New South Wales Cup qualify. It gets a little murky when it comes to Brisbane and Melbourne due to the fact that Brisbane no longer have just the standard reserve grade team like they used to have with Toowoomba.
Yeah.
Now they kind of spread their players around. Well, unfortunately, that's their fault. They should have more of a streamlined way they do it. And Melbourne, obviously, just due to geographical reasons, they can't have people playing out of Fitzroy. So that they pull a lot of their teams from players from the Queensland Cup. From my understanding at the moment, it's still mainly East Brisbane, isn't it?
For Melbourne?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Sunshine Coast, that's their direct club, Sunshine Coast Falcons. Yeah, that's theirs. And then
that'd mean the Sunshine Coast is out. They couldn't qualify in, because the problem with that is you can't, the Melbourne, if this is the time when you kind of rest players and you bring other people to play in, you wouldn't be able to weaken those teams unless they could find a way around that by bringing more people in through, say, the under 19s from the Sunshine Coast team.
Yeah. Which they do in the FA Cup. So say, like, they'll usually have, like in the round that just played with Arsenal, it's we're up to round 16. Probably half to three quarters of the squad are your Premier League regulars, and the rest were Premier League bench players generally. So you do get that mix, whereas Nottingham Forest were playing their full strength team because they don't have, this is their big stage of the season. I was looking at it there would be, that would be the biggest issue. How are you going to pick certain clubs, not pick other clubs, that sort of stuff? I was going to throw this idea to you as well. Were you looking at going down to A grade of local comps, or do you think that's too big of a gap?
I don't mind it at all. What I'd be more inclined to try and get them to do would be have a team of like a selectors from that competition to choose the best A grade players to represent that area. So whether it be group 10 or group 7, things like that, if it's the Parramatta Junior Comp, or just the Parramatta Junior Comp, say they picked the best out of Grey Staines, Cabramatta, all the rest of those, Wentworthville, all available there. Same with, say, if it was in Queensland, the A-grade competition there, you'd pick the best of the Inala, the...
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Springwood, and make a representative team, and then you'd go in the qualifiers to try and qualify in.
Yeah, cool. I like that idea. I kind of, my way of thinking about it was a little bit different, but I think that way, it'd minimize the number of teams. I had in my head, say you got your local comp of A grade, the top four from the previous year automatically qualify for next year's Buchanan Cup, we'll call it. And so you'd have, say, the four top teams from Sunny Coast, the four top teams from Central Queensland, the four top teams from Parramatta, whatever. And they play during their regular season. So they play on weekends. They'd play one of these games, say, on the Wednesday night as qualifiers. But I think that would be too many teams, whereas your idea, having a selection team at the end of, say, the 2022 season, that selected team, regardless of if they choose change clubs or whatever, they'd be the representative team for the 2023 Buchanan Cup. And then that you'd probably get you, say another 5 and 5 plus the New South Wales Cup, Queensland Cup. You could even just end up going top five of the previous year qualify.
Definitely.
So top four plus the fifth place getter.
Now, the only sticking point is the direct, feeder teams to the NRL, but it depends.
I reckon you'd be able to include it. You just wouldn't be able to have them versus each other, obviously.
No, but look, that's the part of a knockout competition. It can happen, so it muddies the water when it comes to that part, unfortunately.
You would love it from a neutral's point of view to watch the Melbourne Storm versus Sunshine Coast Falcons. Clubs would never sign off on this, just so people are aware, because the last thing they'd want would be an injury picked up from their feeder club versus their top club. That's why they have non-contact jerseys and stuff at trainings, obviously. But from a neutral's point of view, that'd be freaking brilliant. Like, when Harry Grant was coming back from injury, you would have had Harry Grant versus Brendan Smith both versing each other in a Melbourne shootout, which would have been really cool.
It wasn't that long ago that the All Blacks brought back the possibles and probables test game, which I remember watching that, loving it, absolutely loving it, and having dog in the fight because I'm Australian. I didn't really care, but I just loved to see those guys, the possibles, give it to the probables to show that they're worthy of it. And some guys did that and got picked on an All Black tour out of that game. So,
but that was a carrot. It's an All Black jersey or an All Black tour. What's the carrot here? Because it's going to take time for it to have, say, prestige and pride. Like, we know State of Origin players would play for free. You'd hope they'd play for free. Because there's that legendary status. This as a brand new competition, what is there as a carrot?
Obviously, there has to be a prize money involved. There's got to be a way to get around to incentivize that. It's the same way they had the Auckland Nines. Like, how are you going to have, the people take it seriously? We put up a lot of money. There's got to be a lot. So there's got to be a way of sponsorship to be able to get it. If you can convince the sponsors that this cup is going to mean something and treat it like it means something, incentivize the clubs to make it mean something, then it becomes what it is. For the top teams, you don't want to be seen as the team that didn't beat a lower ranked team. But also it helps out if you're playing like, same as with the English Premier League. I'm a Newcastle United supporter. And for ever, we've just been terrible. Yeah,
we've been through a lot. The last few years, especially.
Yeah, but even during the Alan Shearer years, we were never good in cup competition. We were always doing well in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
We find a lot of the teams that aren't doing very well in the Premier League, who are struggling down the bottom, they put a lot of emphasis on the cup.
Yes.
But we can't make the finals, or we can't make Euro. We're going to do everything we can to win the cup. So you will see teams that, oh, look, we've been struggling this week. You know, we're not making the finals. It's not going to happen. Let's put all our efforts into winning the cup.
Because in the for those who don't know the FA Cup, if you win the FA Cup as a Premier League team and you don't finish in the top six, it gives you automatic entry into the Europa League next year, which means they play in Europe and there's more prize money up for grabs. If you're one of the top teams and you're usually playing against the best teams in Europe, like your Manchester City, your Chelsea, Liverpool of recent years, there's really no incentive for the FA Cup outside of the pride of winning, because it's such an old competition, because the prize money is pales in comparison to what they'd be getting in Europe. For NRL, it'd have to be, there's no international competition for them to go into to compete. It would literally need to be, hey, you win this, it's $5 million straight back into your club facilities or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. I think $5 million might be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, true. I just, first time it came to my head. I'm thinking of like Premier League money and that's nothing.
Yeah, but there could also be other concessions that are given to the club as well.
True.
Whether it's just spitballing here, whether it's salary cap concessions, something simple like that. So we don't give you liquid assets, as in cash, but you can earn that kind of stuff on the top of it. That might give them a big incentive for the big clubs.
Well, I love it. It's definitely a pie in the sky concept, but we've seen it work in the A-League, albeit a much different setup to what we've got in the NRL. But I want to thank Sean for jumping on at very short notice. We'll wrap it up there. That's a good half hour. And I'd say good luck to the Penny Panthers, but they've had a couple of good seasons and we've had a fair bit of feedback. We were down at the grand final and the prelims last year, and it was all the Penrith fans I've met down there. Very nice. The ones I've met on social media, it's a bit more hit and miss. But
I think that social media is hit and miss for every club.
You know what? That's 100% true, except for Parramatta.
Yeah.
Take that.
Yeah, please. No, you're right on that one. Bang on.
Well, good luck with your three boys playing footy and the fourth boy, whatever he decides to do. Good luck with your Springwood Tigers and Penrith Panthers.
I know that's my old club from in Queensland. We're the Glenmore Park Brumbies.
Oh, Glenmore Park Brumbies. Gee, man, yes, loyalty is true to Penrith and true to. Was it Glenmore?
Glenmore Park.
They almost put Glenmore and Springwood together then.
You never know. They could play each other in the cup.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So good luck for all that next season and thanks for jumping on, mate.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's what my dad says.
Okay. Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed that. And thank you again, Sean. All right. Our best 1-17s. For Newcastle, Manly and Canterbury. We did Cowboys, Titans, Broncos last week. And pretty much as soon after that, Cowboys came out and said Val Holmes will probably be playing left centre. So I've shifted him from fullback to left centre and put Fidow back at fullback and actually really like that back line. But let's start with Newcastle. Jared's boys. Next one down. I found this one mostly straightforward.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to prop Newcastle ones. There's not many people. There's a good comparison of not many people pushing for spots, but not many people like pretty set players in their positions as well, minus a few key ones. Mm-hmm. So the big news came out, well, I think it was 3 days ago. Jaden Brayley has torn his Achilles, and he's out for, 5 to 8 months or something? He's had surgery today, I'm pretty sure, from the Newcastle boards.
It's a big blow.
That is possibly the biggest blow we could have, considering we just lost Mitchell Pearce.
Yeah.
And I honestly, if I had to pick a number 1-17, I would prefer to lose anyone but Brayley for a long period of time. Like, he's that crucial to Newcastle. It's scary. But as I said, it'd be interesting what Newcastle do next if they just keep what they've got or they go out in the market. Just remember they have a spare 800 grand from losing Pierce, so they've got a bit of money to spend if they do want to bring someone in. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure who at this point, But yeah, we'll see. But Ponga plays fullback, obviously. I've actually got Edric Lee, who recently signed a training trial deal with Newcastle after his contract ran out. I hopefully they put him in the top 30 and he gets a run, because I think Newcastle are looking a lot better with Edric Lee on the wing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got Heimel Hunt on the other wing with Gay Guy at best in the centres. So I don't think much is going to change from there. I think that's pretty reasonably strong with size and speed there. I'm pretty happy with that. In the halves, this is going to be what's different. Last year, Clifford was making a really good combination with Mitchell Pearce, but now Adam Clune, as far as I'm concerned, is the best option to go there, considering I don't think they're going to go after a new halfback now this close to the season. So I think they're going to put Clune at 7 with Jake Clifford. And then you've got Safidi and Clemmer up front. Last year, they've done a lot of starting games with the Safidi twins at props. I think Clemmer's their best starter. But, you know, there's a lot of rotation going on. I just prefer him. I've got actually Chris Randall at 9 to cover Brayley, but I'll get to that in a bit later. I've got Frizzell and Fitzgibbon on the edges with Barnett at lock. And I've got Kurt Mann, Suaso Su, Jacob Saifidi, and Brad Jones on the thing. So I think the key there is pretty well Adam Clune at halfback, but what I've got is Randall rotating with Mann throughout the thing. So justification for that is Randall and Mann are the same player as Jaden Brayley. So Randall has got the record for the most tackles on debut, making 68 and missing 2. Kurt Mann can't tackle for shit, but he can run, he can attack. You combine them together, you get Jaden Brayley. This is the only solution I came up with, a decent hooker combination. That's the only reason I got Mann at 14. It's the only way I can think of it. There's a few other options from Crossland in there, but there's no other options.
Yeah, there's no other options.
Yeah.
So I had 16 of the 17 players you had.
Yeah, right. I'm guessing not in the same positions, though.
No, pretty much.
Yeah, it's pretty set team.
Yeah, I had Dominic Young on the wing instead of Hunt, but I had Hunt as my 18th man. So
yeah, right. I don't mind that. He's very, very quick in size. He's got very bad hands.
That's what. Yeah, he was a winger.
They kind of need hands, but right.
No, they. Catch and put down. He was all right. He was pretty good last year. Yeah, there you go. See? Clifford and Clune. Either Saifidi twins starting. I think as Clemmer continues to get older, Jacob Saifidi is going to be taking on a larger workload anyway. You may as well start it while you've still got Clemmer there as a mentor. Fitzgibbon, Frizzell, Barnett. So I wasn't real fussed with Fitzgibbon's play last year, especially coming back from injury. He was very mistake prone. So I was putting a question to you. Is there the possibility of Barnett playing on an edge, or is he just an out and out lock?
No, he played on the edge a lot last year. He's very, very aggressive on the edge. But the problem with him is his aggression.
Yeah.
So Barnett, a lot of teams exploited him on the edge because he has a tendency to shoot up. He's very big on the big hit. He's very, very.
That can be coached, though.
But in the NRL, if you've got a second row who's going against his current instinct, it's very, very accident-prone right there. That's why I like him at lock, where he can be covered, where he does that aggressive push in.
Yeah.
But
I just had an option there of Frizzell and Barnett on the edges and Sue at lock and have Fitzgibbon coming off the bench. But
yeah, see, you're exactly right. Fitzgibbon had a horrible year last year. He has potential, that bloke. He really does. He's got the size. He's got the whole run. I think he tries too hard sometimes. I think the issue was
when he came back from injury. Yeah. He was trying to do too much.
Well, see, when he first came out, he was really strong hitting those holes. Really, really strong. And then I don't know if it was O'Brien or Brown or Fitzgibbon himself, he wanted to do the hit and spin a lot. And that was a really Ponga would give him a short ball, he'd hit and spin and try and duck it around back to Ponga, which, you know, in great theory if it works, but it didn't work half the time. Everyone read it. He wasn't good enough at it. So he picks up that, or he just goes back to his original, hitting that hole really hard because he's a lanky motherfucker. He's hard to tackle. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's got a lot. If he gets his head right back to where he's debuted, he's got some potential.
Yeah, I had Kurt Mann at 14 as well. Brody Jones. So my bench was Mann, Clemmer, Jones, Sue. And yours is Mann, Saifidi, Jones, Sue.
How much do you reckon the impact Gagai will make for Newcastle?
Because as much as he did last time he did everything himself and had no one around him.
Yeah, well, this time you have a bit more around him. I think it just rounds out that back line a lot better. You know what I mean? Like, it just looks a lot stronger. Because last year, well, they had about six or seven players.
Tuala, Sasagi.
Shibasaki. Hunt.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, they had a lot. Brody Jones started once or twice in the centres. Like, they, yikes. And having Gagai there, that is, it kind of just locks it in a bit better.
Yeah. Now, so there's other players that you'd expect through a year to push for positions. Braden Musgrove, Bailey Hodgson's an unknown coming out of the UK.
Yeah, he's a young fullback.
Musgrove's been a bit unsettled. He was at the Knights. He went to Manly, didn't get a run there. He's back at the Knights.
Went to
Toy, Phoenix Crossland have been pushing for a couple of seasons but haven't quite got across the line. So
I think the biggest loss, minus Mitchell Pearce, is close to Josh King. Like, he was just a young front row on the bench who did his job every week. There's no fanfare. What about Pesami Sulo? He went and lost him, and he's a big human being, but he hasn't. He's very, very slow, and it didn't help that he broke his, like, had a corkscrew fracture in his tibia.
That was that one, that's right.
Yeah, it was horrendous against Canberra. I've watched that game too. I think Josh King is a massive loss. He's going to Melbourne this year. I think there's a lot of plans around that bloke in the next couple of years, and I think it was a mistake letting him go. I really do.
All right. Where's... So with our 1 to 17s, we're doing a rough prediction. We'll do a more accurate one as we lead up. Where are we seeing the Knights in a bracket of 4? 1 to 4, 5 to 8, 9 to 12, 13 to 16.
That Brayley, 9 to 12.
Yeah, me too.
Like I said, I'd rather lose Ponga than Brayley, to be honest.
I actually would too.
Like if you look at the Newcastle,
winner, and they play a hell of a lot better with him in. But
yeah,
how's he going to get the ball? What's the service from dummy half going to be like?
One of the most underrated hookers in the comp, I reckon.
And you've lost Pierce, so where's the creativity going to come from and the control through the middle of the park as well? Yeah,
that's a lot is going to be on Clifford. Clune, because Clifford's this one. But the big point. Yeah, it's massive. And if you Newcastle highlights, the best highlights Newcastle could produce last year was when Jaden Brayley, I think he ran down Tony Staggs or someone like that. And he if you look at the highlights, it's massive. He puts him out in bottom corner and he already made 50 tackles that game. And that's what we're going to be missing. And it's so sad.
Alrighty, we will move on to the Seagulls. Alrighty. So to most people, this back line should be pretty easy to pick, and so I made it completely different. 6-9.
Oh,
so
no, here we go.
On the list for Manly, there's only 11 backs to choose from. They're very thin in the backs. We knew that last year, and they haven't signed anybody, and they've lost Sully. So
I want to ask. So yeah. Newcastle lost Pierce, which they got 800 grand out of.
Mm.
You just lost Sully. I don't think he was on a high contract. Do you have any money?
It was on 650, I think.
Yeah. Well, do you have any money to go after anyone? Like, I just don't know. Like, it seems like,
you know what would be a really easy way to find out is if all the salaries were transparent.
I'm really curious because you've got a lot of money tied up in Turbo and DCE and Jake Tarojevic, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you look across that squad, Walker and Foran would be the next ones who are big. The rest of them, I don't see too many
high-end contracts
at you. Well, there you go. So that's my point. Like, Foran wouldn't be on much either.
Tapau's on a bit, and they looked to try and offload him in the offseason, but there were no suitors. So he's back for another year. I don't want to lose him anyway.
Have you paid anyone else, like, out of Manly? I just don't see where all your money is. And it's not a crack. They might be just managing, like, saving their pennies. But
I think, yeah.
Surely you can buy an outside back somewhere.
Yeah, definitely could. And
yeah.
Like,
considering how many outside backs, like, you guys weren't even considered in the conversation for Addo Carr or, you know, anyone like that. But I just don't see where we, unless all your money is literally, like, you've got a third of your bloody salary cap in Tom Trbojevic, which I would understand.
Yes.
But, yeah, it's just, I don't get it.
Well, you've got Schuster and Olicard who have come along. Well, I wouldn't say expected. But
they wouldn't be on big contracts.
No, that's what I mean, though. But they're in a position to be playing, starting the NRL while they're still on cheap contracts.
So you're thinking that they're going to throw a lot of money at these two blokes, like the young guys?
Oh, hell yes. So,
like, which they should. It's fantastic, but... currently, like, I just don't see it.
They've used up some of the money re-signing some players who I would have let walk. And like I said, KO Weeks, Koala and Ben Trbojevic are all part of Manly's future because they're ultra talented, especially Weeks and Koala and
Paseka. Yeah, you just must be saving your pennies because you got Saab on the cheap too.
Yeah. And then you got Sione Finau still coming through. Manus Finau still under contract technically. We'll see what happens there.
And there's no way anyone would pay Parker and Garrett more than $20. So
no. Well, let's look at our list. So,
I put Garrick at number one. I just think he deserves his spot. Turbo got like 35 tries this. I expected him to get 38.
40? Yeah, he felt short.
I was a bit disappointed about that one
as well.
Yeah. Let's hope he doesn't go running down the main street of Manly anymore.
Yeah, true.
So Garrick Turbo fullback. Yeah, Walker and Parker in the centers.
Yes, Dylan Walker in the centers.
Yeah.
And Koala in the centres.
Oh, you're just giving him a run.
I want him to debut because even
he's not going to.
If we're going to have a centre making mistakes, I want it to be the youngster who's learning at that level rather than the two they're going to not offer any more than they've ever done.
Right. Look, Adam's pretty famous for not liking Parker. So.
No. I like them as people. They're great club people, especially Parker. He's come through the system. He does nothing but good things for the community and the club.
No, but you don't like him.
I also want my team to have the best chance of winning, and he's not anything above average. His defense is his best attribute, and he was found out so much last year, especially in the run to the finals.
Two redheaded children. You got something against redheads.
Oh, I loved Alan Tung. He was great.
We still haven't figured out how Adam got two redhead kids, though. Hey, Walt.
Well, bloody hell.
So, forward and DC into halves, obviously.
Yes. It's like,
and
it's
then you got.
I was going to say Christian Tui Piloto. I'd love to see him get a run, but I don't see it happening because I don't want to.
Is he a six or a seven? So
he's a winger.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
We signed him from the Roosters previous to last season. And George Tafua is still on the books.
So when Foran, his legs give out,
yeah,
which is going to happen any day now,
yeah.
Schuster goes into six. When Cherry retires, I think he's got 1 year left, two years left, something like that. Who goes to seven for Manly?
The other Finau, I would say.
Okay. So Schuster and Finau, are they the kind of combination you want where one's organising or what's the go?
I haven't seen enough of Finau to say. So, like, it's a hard thing of living in Queensland unless I get it. It's pretty hard to find New South Wales Cup games, etc., especially if they're not fully recorded and you just see the highlights. Like, it's hard to glean a lot from highlights except for the finishing touches. Like, how did the team actually get there on the park? Who was directing them there and all that sort of stuff? So it's been hard to watch that sort of stuff. But going through the junior club, where is he? Oh, KO Weeks is a 5'8", but he's also a fullback, and he's super silky, super smooth. He's going to be an awesome player to watch.
Moving forward.
Yeah. Where's the other one? Sione Funa. There he is. Fullback as well.
You have a lot of fullbacks.
Technically, Tim Simone is still in the books.
Jacob Sykes. The reason I asked that is Schuster's a very, very talented player, and I love the fact you guys are getting him game time without the pressure of having six on his back. I love it. I reckon it's just the best way to do it for you guys.
Yeah.
Question I've got for him is that he's very, tricky. Like, he's very, very foot pass orientated. He loves them. He's good at them too. You can't blame him for that. But the question I've got is, in today's game where speed off the mark is like the epitome of love right now because you needed the six again rules, will he be a liability stand one step off the scrum at six with his size and his lack of speed?
He's got enough.
Like, he's not quick.
Well, Ian, say like Cody Walker's got pace and he's still a liability because he can't tackle. So
yeah, that's his defensive technique. I'm not questioning his technique. I'm questioning the reality of the fact that right now, when you guys are defending, Foran goes to halfback on the scrums and Cherry Evans goes to six because Foran's not quick enough across the fence. Will Schuster be identified as a slower version out wide when he gets the six on his back eventually?
They could do. And that's if he gets the six. If he was going to get six, I kind of wanted it last year. Like, it is good having him playing the reps at this level, but there's also then going to be two seasons of second row skills and development. So you kind of have to not unravel, but pick apart the sections that are going to be used in the 5'8".
I honestly think,
so you can kick a ball in 2 years.
The hard reality of an NRL play, I was actually having this conversation with one of my partner's friends the other week, is you look at
definitely Nathan a one-way Weimar conversation.
She was looking at very good-looking rugby league players. I was showing her. I showed her a picture of Adam. You look at Nathan Highmarsh when he debuted, very lean, but very strong still, quick off the mark. But when he retired, he was an absolute monster. He's full barrel chested. His arms were fucking... Schuster's only going to get bigger, in other words. He's not going to lean down. So that's my only concern of him playing six, is that he's going to be too slow when it comes down to it. Because he's got to weigh over 100 kilos now.
106.
Yeah, that's a big, big 5'8 these days. That's actually a monster 5'8". There's no room for 5'8 that size anymore. You know what I mean? Like, with how quick the game is, that's a battle. Second row, that's fine. Like, that's a good weight for a second rower.
On the Manly website, they see him as the long-term 5'8". So they'll cross that bridge, when they get to it. The forward pack.
This is the I'm curious about. So you got Tapan and Paseka up front, which I'm pretty sure is...
Tapau and Paseka walk on. I got nothing against that. I ended up going with Aloi and Tapau as walk on. Yeah. But
Aloi got destroyed last year, just so remember Melbourne game? He just got ripped apart.
Oh, he did he did.
Yeah, so the question I've got, and back to the money question, is while Croker done a very, very good job at 9, how come you guys weren't in the market for a 9? Is it Finau is going to come back this year?
That was the hope. COVID didn't help all that. We already talked about that with his court case and that being pushed back and back and back.
Yeah.
He's more talented than anyone that's on the free market anyway. And
do you reckon being out of the game
we've got money in
2 years?
Oh, he's been training and everything still. He just obviously hasn't been playing the full game, but you don't lose your skills. It's just going to be the impact and the contact and the speed, that sort of stuff. And he's one of the fastest dummy halves in the game when he's there. I don't have any concern. If it was like an average sort of run-of-the-mill sort of dummy
Chris
half.
Chris Randall player.
Yeah. Well, then, I'd be out looking for someone else. Lachlan Croker did enough last year and more, actually, if I'm honest, when I was concerned about what we're going to get out of our position. And with Cherry Evans, Trbojevic, Schuster, there's enough creativity. He just gets the ball. I would like him to run more this year because when he did last year, it was quite effective. And not run to look to pass, just run, because he poked his head through a fair few times.
I really struggle when you guys are playing Broncos, Bulldogs last year. I was like, yeah, that's fine. That's all right. When you guys came up against the Melbournes, the Souths, the Penrith with those elite hookers, that's where I just, you can just tell the service, the identifying when and not to run, the talent out of hooker, the flow on effect that goes onto your forwards, you can just see that difference. And look, we both had a higher rap for Croker, but he just wasn't that talent that you guys needed. And I think there's a big difference.
The big difference when it comes to Fenia. That's why we let Coruscant go at that time.
The big question is, will Fenia get off?
And that's the thing that happened. Like they had both him and Coruscant signed, and they said, "Well, Fenia's going to be here, our long term dummy half, so we'll let Coruscant go." And he goes to Penrith, and then everything happens with Fenia, and then we're like scrambling.
That's exactly my point, because you took that gamble on Fenia, where he's had the talent, he had the youth, which is what you needed.
I don't even think it was a gamble, because he was playing that season with Coruscant anyway, and you could see
gambling now with the fact that you just, like, you didn't even put your hat in for Marnie, didn't even put your hat in to get Coruscant back from Penrith. You're gambling now on the fact that he'll get off, and if he doesn't, you know, there might be another hooker running around you can probably steal, but that means your long-term plan didn't work off. And this is a long-term plan for this bloke. And then he's also got to live up to his potential as well.
Yeah, true.
Because you guys wasted 2 years without getting a long-term hooker. So it's a big risk. I hope it works out for you.
We won a comp with Matt Ballin.
Well, you asked the Broncos. He's the Broncos hooker coach.
I love
he's
Matt Ballin. Great. But he'd never say he was creative.
Well, that's the thing. He is teaching Jake Turpin how to be creative right now. He's the creative hooker mentor at the Brisbane Broncos currently.
Wow. Okay.
So I got Schuster at Olakau'atu.
Yeah.
Olakau'atu at second row with Jake Trbojevic at lock. I got Sean Kempe, Alawai Sipley, and Carl Lawton on your bench. I love Carl Lawton. I think he's a great utility for you guys. And pretty sure there's a few games he started second row last year for you and absolutely killed it.
Yes.
So I reckon he can play hooker, he can play halves, he can play in the centres, he can play in the forwards. He's a very quality player, this bloke.
Yeah, I've got Carl Lawton, Paseka / Alawai, whoever you want to start, bench. I went Bullamore over Kepi and Sipley. Yeah. Because one thing our forwards don't have is speed. And Bullamore has speed. I would love to see him on an edge rather than in prop, to give Olakau'atu even now and then Schuster a break, because we just don't have anyone that's even close to their level of impact or skill. Like Andrew Davies, a run-of-the-mill second rower, but you lose a hell of a lot of aggression, foot speed and stuff. And Morgan Boyle.
Sean Kepi and Morgan Boyle, exact same player.
Yeah. And then the other one close, that'd be Ben Trbojevic. I have him as 18th man. You could have him in there, but he'd be taking probably Sipley's spot if they're going to run Bullamore as a prop. So that'd give you two props, a second row, and Carl Lawton.
I think I think Bullamore needs to play on the edge. I really do. I don't see him as a prop. And that's why I couldn't fit him in this squad.
Yeah.
Because I rate Sipley high and Bullamore.
Yeah, in the prop position. Yeah.
No, Sipley's the second row, isn't he?
No.
No. Crap. Okay, I put Bullamore instead of Sipley there. All right, yeah. Bullamore instead of Kepi.
Yeah, there you go. I agree with you. So we got the same thing. We got the exactly the same thing then, except for the centers. It's how I've got this bench set up basically is a rotation of five props: Tapau, Aloi, Bullamore, Sipley, and Paseka, and Lawton there if someone else needs a break. And it's I can just run at them, just go no let up. Bracket for Manly,
between 4 and 8.
Yeah, I've got them in the same spot as well. What we didn't do was gains and losses for either team. That's our bad. Bloody hell. I'll run through that quickly. We did this last week. So 2022 gains for the Knights, Adam Clune, Dane Gagai, Chris Vialia, Leo Thompson, and Christian Mapalangi. 2022 losses, Blake Green has retired. Josh King went to Melbourne. Mitchell Pearce went to Catalans. Shibasaki went to Rugby Union, Safatoa went to the Tigers, and Connor Watson to the Sydney Roosters. For Manly, there we go. Gaines, Ethan Bullamore, one of the best names if he makes it NRL. Gordon Chen Kum Tong, Jamie Humphries and Jacob Sykes. Losses, Cade Cust, Tavita Funa, Jack Koshevsky, Zach Sadler, Curtis Sirenin, and Moses Suli.
The only loss I'm mad about you for that is Sirenin. Yeah. I can't believe you let Ciro go.
Okay, it's just...
Well, considering you need second rowers.
Yeah, I know, but he was good when he was on the field, and that's always been Sirenin's thing, staying on the field.
Yeah, but that's your physio's problem, not your bloody... Not
yeah, and that's what it came problem. Out as there was issues and all that sort of stuff there, but that was between Sirenin's dad and the club.
That's another story, yeah. But like I rate that bloke, and I think he's a very big loss for you.
Yeah, me too. And we didn't replace him. Well, depends where Bullamore ends up playing. It's a completely different style of player. Gary Bulldogs.
This is going to be interesting. This is going to be a big conversation. The biggest question is, do you approve of their recruitment? Because they're the biggest movers in the NRL currently.
When you saw it over Dribs and Drabs, you know, oh, that's a good player. It's all right. Is it not a bad signing? And then you look at that whole team list and you went, did they get better? I'm pretty sure they got better, but did they get better? So it's not actually that exciting once you put it all on the paper next to each other. Well, so
the best
fact they went out and did stuff. They couldn't just sit there and do nothing.
For me, the best way to explain it is they got players. They got some very talented players, very, very talented players. But the question is, did they get good people? That's what will get me. So, you know.
Because they're going to like walk up and win games because they're nice.
No, that's not the point. If you want longevity at a club, if you want a good atmosphere,
did they sign club, characters? Good character people.
You get quality people, and the people I'm talking about are in the mold of Luke Lewis, the Trbojevic brothers, the Morris twins, the Cam Murray, those sort of players, you're like, yeah, there's nothing we can criticize you for. You play, you're just as talented as everyone else, but there's nothing, like, you're a good person. So, like, person.
Paul Vaughan.
Yeah. Pangola
Jr.
Yeah. And Brett Naden, and you know what? These guys are very talented players, but I wouldn't build a club around them. And my issue is that you bought Josh Adokar, great, and he's an exception to this because I think he's a great person, great media personality, always got a big smile on his face. But this bloke is incredible, But the question's got to be asked, was he incredible because of his talent or was he incredible because of people inside of him? A lot of Melbourne players fail when they leave. And that's a big thing for me. And they put a lot of money into two players with Josh Adokar and Tevita Pangai Jr.
Matt Burton.
That too. There's three players. I would have put all three that, oh, sorry, start with what I said. Both of those kinds of contracts into someone like Cam Murray and paid him $1.5 million and being happy with my purchase instead of having Adokar and Tevita Pangai Jr.
Yeah, but Cam Murray was never going to do the book.
No, but that kind of mold of player, that's just the first guy on the top of my head. He's just the kind of player that I am absolutely stoked for South Sydney. I think they're going in the right direction, naming him as captain. Like that kind of bloke where you got people like Pangai Jr., you're like, oh, mate, you do well for 20 minutes a game and then drop the ball a few more times. And
that's the coaching. That's the coach's job, the coaching setup's job.
Well, I'd like to get a little voice bite of 2 minutes of Wally explaining Matt Duff. I don't mind Duffy. I don't mind him, but I don't think he's going to be a team. He's going to be a fullback you can pull yourself out of the gutter with.
No. Well, let's have a look at the gains and losses because we'll be here for a while. So gains for the Bulldogs, Adokar, Braden Burns, Matt Burton, Josh Cook, Matt Dufty, Max King, Brent Naden, Tevita Pangai Jr., Paul Vaughan. 2022 losses, Renouf Atoni, Dean Britt, Nick Kotrick, Bradley Dietz, Adam Elliott, Tyron Harding, Watson Halita, Will Hopewadi, Sione Katoa, Lachlan Lewis, Fala Kiko Manu, Nick Meaney, Dylan Napa, James Romanus, Chris Smith, and Dallin Watene Zalesniak, which occurred throughout last season. Oof, fair bit there. So when I was doing up my team, there was I've got like four spots. These guys can go there. And if they don't do well this week, the next four guys can go there. There's still a lot of that, but less than last time. So,
well,
I don't know.
And keep an eye on that because they have top end of their contracts to a lot of these players. Like there's a lot of heavy, high price contracts in some of these boys that the lower boys they're struggling to fit under the salary cap. Now they have to get rid of a few people still.
All right, fullback Matt Duffy.
I've got fullback Josh Adokar and Corey Allen on the wings. I've got Braden Burns and Brent Naden in the centres. I don't actually mind that back line. Very, very quick back line. That's fucking electric speed. Not the best hands in the world, but very quick. Allen's probably the safest under the high ball there. I got Burton and Avarillo at 6 and 7. I got Thompson and Bourne up front with Joshua Cook. I'm just going to throw him in the middle because I don't rate Jeremy Marshall King Hooker.
Yeah.
He's like a poor man's version of Lachlan Croker, and I don't really rate him at Hooker either. I've got Tevita Pangai Jr. and Raymond Fatala Mariner in the second row with Josh Jackson at lock. I got Joe Stimson, has to play. Don't care what anyone says, that bloke has to play this year. With Bailey Biondo Otto as a utility, I think he can create a lot of havoc for a lot of players. Very, very elusive, that bloke. And Ava Fanangai, whatever his name is, and Max King at rounding out
17. Yeah, we had pretty much the same team. I think there's three differences. I had Avarillo at center instead of Burns. I had Burns as my eighth man. What? He played there last year. It's pretty good. One thing that, while you've got all that speed and you had Avarillo and Burton again, speed, in the halves, and then you've got a pretty much debutant dummy half, is who's going to control everything and move them up the field. And
well, that's my issue with the Bulldogs. They haven't bought anyone too. Who's a hooker who can do that?
No. I still, Flanagan's still around. If you give him one job to do, just get us up the field, get us in good position, kick at the right time. We'll create everything.
Him, I don't mind that, actually.
Him with Burton. So you have Dufty, Adokar, Averillo, or Burns, Naden, Allen, Burton, Flanagan. I had the same forwards, except I had Tevita Pangai at lock with Stimson and Fatala Mariner on the edges with Jackson on the bench.
Oof, geez. Yeah, right. I mean, honestly,
it's going to make any difference the other way. But yeah, obviously, Jackson's going to lock down the middle better than Tevita Pangai overall, you'd say. But with regards to meters...
Look, the only concern I have for that is that you're wasting minutes out of Jackson there, because with Pangai Jr., you can inject him when you need to off the bench when he needs to create something, where Jackson would just do the same thing in every minute of every game, just tackle, 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 run, run, run. Might not make the meters, as you said, but no one's getting through that middle with him there.
Yeah, it's also no threat in attack.
With Pangai, like with the fact is that Jackson can play 80 minutes. Pangai cannot. But the ability for him is that you only need him on for 15 minutes to change the game.
What about this then? You start Pangai at lock, 15, 20 minutes. Jackson comes on for Pangai. And then you can re-inject Pangai pretty much wherever you want for his second stint.
See, I'd rather Pangai come up against people who are tired.
That's what I mean.
So he'll on 25-minute mark.
No. He will start, but the second time when he comes on, he's had his rest. And then the coach can then go, all right, our props are getting dominated, jump in there. Or they've got an injury on the edge, we'll throw him on the edge and run over people.
I just think that you need Jackson playing 80 minutes
to walk
down that middle.
But it's only one side of the ball he's having an impact. Oh, I suppose Sevier Pengo's doing the same. But Bulldogs, usually scoring points.
Yeah, but you don't need to score points up the middle.
No, but I want as many players on there that can.
Yeah, I just, not for the whole game. You need someone like Jackson. I believe you've got Fatala Mariner and Pangai Jr. there. Paul Vaughan can score a try. Josh Cook is like a clone of Damien Cook. He's very, very talented, this kid. I've seen a lot of his games. He's very, very good. And South Sydney were very disappointed to lose that guy. And then that's the point of how, and the advantage of having Burns and Naden in the centres is with Dufty, Josh Adokar, and Corey Allen, they weigh about 200 kilos between the three of them. Burns and Naden put some size in the back line too, with speed. It's a very rare commodity in the NRL.
True.
So that's why I had them instead of Averillo. But I 100% agree with you, Flanagan. I completely forgot about it. I reckon he should start at 7. I'm changing that.
Yeah. I just looked up, like when I said Bulldogs had issue scoring points, they scored 340 points. Melbourne scored 815. That's a gap of 475. So they got outscored by 475. That gap is more points than the Cowboys scored, the Broncos scored, the Warriors scored, the Dragons scored.
That's 100 tries.
The Knights scored.
Yeah.
So like they...
That's 100 tries. 475 is...
Far out.
That's 100 tries in a row. That's massive.
So bad. Wow. Like
that is huge. And that's not even counting the 75. I'll put down that 75 points of goal kicking. 100 tries is 400 points.
My gosh. That's horrible.
Yeah.
But
their back line is very, very strong.
Is the ball going to get there? And will they be in a good field position to use it? That's my question.
I think the biggest issue, we haven't even discussed their biggest issue. No, I mean, Barrett's not going to lead them anywhere.
No.
Barrett's not the coach to lead this team, I don't believe. I really don't.
Yeah.
I think there's better coaches out there. There's got to be another coach out there to take this team further.
I'll do it.
Got to be. You couldn't even win a premiership in C grade.
Yeah, I know. Has Barrett?
Probably not.
Who knows? I'm having a look here. Three, all right. Bracket, where are they sitting?
Bottom four.
Yeah, me too. Will they improve? They can't get worse, but they've got a hell of a lot more talent. They're not, the whole team's not just guys anymore. They've got players here that they can definitely have a more productive, more successful season. One thing we also didn't talk about is you've got, so in our 17s, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So 8 out of the 17 are new to the club. That's a hell of a lot of gelling, and it's going to take time.
Hold up. 1, 2, 3, 4 of those 8 were rejects from their club. Like Matt Duffy was told he wasn't wanted. Brent Naden was fired for the decisions he made before the 2020 grand final. Paul Vaughan is Paul Vaughan. That can't be argued at this point. And Tevita Pango Jr. was not wanted at the Broncos anymore.
Hmm.
So they're four people who I would say Brent Naden, Paul Vaughan and Tevita Pango Jr., three of those four, I wouldn't say Dufty, but three of those four created massive personnel in their clubs, decisions they made.
Yeah, and look where it's got him, the doghouse.
Boom! Well, look, as long as Paul Vaughan can't invite anyone else to his doghouse, we're all good to go.
That's it. Oh, what a way to finish the show. There we go. So... I'm very excited. Tomorrow I'll be having a chat with a staff member at the Broncos and finding the ins and outs with regards to their youth development. It's finally coming after a couple of episodes of us talking about it. It's been hard to get a hold of people. So there'll be some of that for next week. Enjoy the interview with Sean, and we'll be back with three more 1 to 17s next week. What about Western Sydney, Parramatta, West and Penrith?
Yeah, sounds good. That'd be actually really interesting. I was speaking to Billy yesterday, Parramatta supporter. He actually threw up a really interesting option I'd like to throw out to you next week.
Sounds good to me. See you then, bro.
See ya.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. See ya.
Thank you for tuning in to Six Again. Connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and the Six Again website. All links via the show's bio. Be sure to check out Adam's craft beer choice of the week.